And hello, everyone, and welcome once again to a very special edition of Authors Alive, the only show on any medium that goes beyond the standard press release and delves into the hearts, minds, and souls of those that are making meaningful contributions as authors. Authors Alive is brought to you by GreatSellingResults.com. If you want to be a publisher, or if you want to have a steady income from your professional credibility, then go to GreatSellingResults.com. My name is John DePietro. It's a pleasure to welcome you here to this event. And our special guest today is Mr. Ray Kelly III, a very successful sales exec from Dallas, Texas. Ray, welcome to Authors Alive.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the opportunity to be on with you.
Well, Ray, first thing I have to do is ask you, it says Ray Kelly III. And in one of the things that you talk about in the opening of the book, you mention your dad. So obviously he was Ray Kelly Jr.
Yes, sir.
And tell us about your relationship with your dad and how your dad may have influenced this writing.
Well, the interesting part is, you know, like most, or like many, I won't say most, but like many kids, you know, that we have a great relationship with our fathers up until a point. And that point for me was probably right out of college. And then out of college or going in right in the middle of college, I became your typical 20-year-old know-it-all.
Know-it-all.
So, yeah, imagine that, right? And my dad became less and less important to me. But up through my childhood, you know, my dad had a lot of quirky one-liners that kind of instilled into my head, such as, and I use them in the book, such as stupid people suffer more. And
you know what? And that I want to go back to that in a minute, but go ahead, because that's really a couple good stories in that.
Yeah, and then ignorance is curable, but stupidity is forever. So, you know, he really had a strong influence in my life. He grounded me spiritually. And then, you know, from about my 20s and until really just before my dad passed away, my relationship with him was tumultuous, would probably be the best way to explain it. We just really kind of got off to a bad rocky start into my adulthood and had to work really hard and overcome a lot of obstacles. But the influence that he had on me early on was certainly incredible, and you know, those are the memories that I continue to hold on to with my father.
And he was not very old when he passed away, is that correct?
No, he was just 70. So you know, it was cancer came on, and it came on pretty quick, and took him out you know, very fast. So yeah, we miss him dearly.
You know what? The reason I asked the questions about your dad and about the how old he was when he passed is that time goes by pretty quickly, and so many times in the business world, people say, "Well, I'm gonna, you know what? I'll do that down the road." But sometimes down the road, you know, is closer than you think, and then you put it off. And let's face it, with the environment that we are in right now in the business world, there are plenty of people whose dreams of working for a company from college graduation to retirement have been shattered through no fault of their own. And I think you'd agree that now and now, more and more people are thinking of starting their own business. And first of all, would you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly in that boat. I someday would not like to have to continue to work for someone else, and would like to start my own business, and I'm actually engaged in trying to do that. But you know, working for the man, you know, the man's not always going to be there for you anymore.
Right, and with the era of mergers and acquisitions that we're in right now, the new man or woman that comes in might not have any allegiance to you whatsoever. So you can be the person who's sticking out like a sore thumb because you're making a good amount of money, and you know what? You're making the money because you worked for it, but the other person might see you as a liability.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, John, because that's exactly what happened to me when I was working for a startup several years ago. My team and our company got absorbed by a very large global multinational company, and my team was basically a small elite Delta force, you know, of real strong hunters, and we were being compensated well, and we walked into the machine, and the machine had a different pay structure for everything, and really saw us as more a liability because they didn't understand the value that my team brought. And it wasn't but within 18 months my entire team had left the company on their own because they didn't, the company that we were absorbed from didn't see the value. So that happened.
So they put you through hell.
Oh yeah, it was horrible.
They put you through hell.
Absolutely.
even though you may have given up a baseball game or, well, hold on, right? You may have given up a football game of your kids to go to because, you know, work took you away or you, you know, missed some family time on the weekends. The new people really don't care.
Right. They, like you said, there was no allegiance. They didn't see the value proposition that we were bringing. They didn't see the effort that went into the reasons why that company wanted to acquire us in the first place.
Hmm. You know what? I've got your book in my hand here. It's called The Hourglass Principle. And the interesting thing is it's not really about time management, is it?
No, it has absolutely nothing to do with time management, although we do touch on it briefly. The Hourglass Principle really is about managing the middle of that relationship. And the analogy that I've used with the hourglass is that if you think of all of your corporate objectives, the products and services that you're trying to sell, the marketing spin, all the information that you have and that you're gathered, all that information is funneled down like through the center of the hourglass. And you, the salesperson, are that very point in the middle that all the sand flows through. And your responsibility then as a salesperson is to take that, these grains of sand, and spread them out through the bottom half of the hourglass to your different customers and your customer base, your prospects, whoever it is that you're trying to target. Likewise, and what makes the hourglass is you got to flip that thing upside down. And now you become the customer advocate. So all the customer's needs, requirements, wants, desires, things that they'd like to see your service or product grow into get funneled back through you, and now you have to sell them back out to your corporate environment.
So
you're really
now
the customer advocate, yes.
In the top part of the funnel, before you turn the hourglass over, you're working for the company, selling to the client or the prospect. When the time comes that the sands have all gone through and the hourglass needs to be flipped, now, after the sale is made, you're thinking on behalf of the client. Am I correct in grabbing that analogy?
Yeah, correct. I mean, it's been my experience, at least in my sales philosophy, that I've been more successful being able to flip that hourglass upside down now and become the customer advocate within my own organization. The company you work for, the ones
yep.
that pay your bills, you know, you certainly have the ability, the desire, the need, the requirement to represent that company to the best of your ability. And many times what happens is we get so focused on our own company that we forget about our customer. And
wow.
customers then, as the salesperson, it's your responsibility, I believe, as well, to be the customer advocate inside your organization. So
there
that
may,
when the arrows yeah. start flying, you know, you're going, whoa, wait a minute, that's not the customer's fault. And being able to stand up and take responsibility or have your company take responsibility for what the customer is asking for.
You know, Ray, it's interesting that you bring that up because in my sales career, I had a situation where I ended up fighting more internally to do things for the client than getting the client on board as a client to begin with. And many times I think companies make the mistake of thinking that once a client is a client, they're a client forever. And today it's certainly not true because they have an opportunity to deal on a national and international basis to find a vendor to suit their needs. The other thing that I find interesting about what you're saying is that in my own situation, similar to yours, and the beauty of this whole relationship that you and I have is we have not even met face-to-face yet. We've met on the Internet, and which is an example of two people putting their synergies together to make something happen and having that same opportunity for each company to develop new relationships as well. Let's talk about Can I be pretty bold here with this next question?
Sure.
Christian principles in business today. You got to be kidding me, Ray, because bottom line is what determines the success of a business, and you've got accountants that are running businesses, and quite frankly, they don't care how you get the bottom line in black ink. And how can Ray Kelly be so bold to say Christian principles may lead to success in business?
Well, where I'm driving that is whether or not we believe it or not, or whether or not you're a Christian or not, the principles that are out there, many of them are biblically based. And that's some of the things that I'm trying to pull out of this book. Many of the things that we talk about in terms of money being the root of all evil and all the rest of that kind of stuff, they come from the Bible. So it's understanding, you know, that is a source for you. And my belief is that there's no reason for you to have to sell your soul to get a deal. Yes, we're all focused on the bottom line. Yes, we all want to win. And yes, we're all driven to do that. But I think that you can do it with a high level of integrity based on Christian principles as opposed to you know, get a deal at whatever cost, whatever you have to say, whether you lie, cheat, or steal, because then really you've become a con artist. And there's a fine line between a con artist and a salesperson.
So basically, there is still a way to be a nice guy and win.
You know, I've been a nice guy my entire career, and don't feel like I've had to lie, cheat, or steal my way to get to where I'm at. And although I'm not the most successful person, I'm not Bill Gates and I'm not related to him, but we do very well and we do comfortably, and I didn't have to lie, cheat, or steal to get there. So I certainly believe that, you know, I personally, and I know that there's ways that you can manipulate or finesse a customer to get them to understand your point of view, and you're not going to win them all. No one ever does. But I think that the ones that you do win will then be relationships that you can carry forward with you to your next job and to your next job and to your next job. Because as you stated earlier, you don't walk into a company anymore out of college and stay there your entire career. You're three or four or five companies down the road, same customers that you're selling to, if you sell to them with a high level of integrity, you'll be able to go back to that well time and time again to talk about your new product and service.
And then you can bring them with you.
Yeah, I absolutely think so.
To your new place. You know, you've used the word relationship about three times already, and we've only been on the air for about 12 minutes. Define why you use that word so prominently, and how do you define relationships?
Well, I think that, you know, relationships, and I use the words personal connections a lot in the book, The Hourglass Principle, and creating those personal connections. You know, for me, I've had more success selling somebody when I'm not selling. And what I mean by that is people don't like to be sold. People like to buy.
Like to buy. Yep.
Absolutely. So, you know, when you can create a relationship with someone, you can create a personal connection. And I have a subchapter in the book that I titled Fishing, Golf, Fashion, Kids, and People Magazine. So as long as you can do one of those five things, you can carry on a conversation with anybody.
Tell me about what you mean by those five things.
So what I mean is that basically if you have a general knowledge of those things, if you have a general idea of being able to create a connection with somebody, either by creating having a similar hobby like fishing or golf or hunting.
Oh, okay.
So if you have a hobby that gives you an instant ability to have a conversation with someone that's not business related.
A connection. Yep.
Absolutely. And, you know, also, you know, but the workforce isn't just about, you know, like the old days, right, where it's just hunting, golf, and fishing. It's not a man's world anymore. It's a very much a co-ed world. So you need to be able to talk about those things, but you also need to have some idea of what's going on in the fashion world. If you have kids, share stories about kids. People Magazine, you know, great source of articles for you to connect to people.
Yep.
So really it's about creating those personal connections and creating basically a profile of the person that you're talking to. When you first walk into their office, you take a look around, see what's on their walls, where
their
they go to college.
Their trinkets.
All the things that they're proud of is what's hanging up on the walls. I have a customer that I went into one time, and the whole back wall was postered with their kids' artwork from school.
Hey, Ray, let me stop you. Did you steal my book and take a chapter right out of it? Because that's exactly what I say. When you go in, spend your first few minutes observing. For example, and I'll let you get back to that kids thing in a minute.
Sure.
If you walk in and you see the person has three golf balls on his desk, and there's a picture of the 18th hole at Pebble Beach in back, and then over in the side of their office they have a putter with one of those little machines that you putt toward it, and it kicks it back. You know, after you make the putt, do you think that it might be logical to say, hey, did you see what Tiger did yesterday? You know, say it's a Monday, and you know, Tiger came from five back on the last round of a tournament. What you're saying is find something that you have in common with the person that has nothing to do with the widget or the service or the product that you're selling, so that you're selling as a human being and not as a machine.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with that because, I mean, you know, basically you want to create a profile. And I talk about being a chameleon in my book, and basically a chameleon takes on and the shape or the environment that they're in. So immediately you want to take on that shape. You want to be a chameleon. You want to be like the person you're trying to sell to, because people like to buy from people that are like them. And, you know, nine times out of ten, someone, if it comes down to, you know, the, everything being equal, people are going to choose the one that they have the better relationship with. And in today's world, you know, most of the time you can come down to things being pretty darn equal unless you have a technology that's, you know, somewhat advanced or unique, or, you know, that you're the only one out there, et cetera. But for the most of us, it comes down to relationship. And what kind of relationship, what kind of personal connection that you can create with that person is going to help dictate your success. So if you go in there overconfident and arrogant, then you're going to come off that way to other people and rub them the wrong way.
So you would suggest that, say, for example, you knew that your client's son was an upcoming football, high school football phenom in Texas. It might be logical then, if there are clippings of the kid in the paper, to cut them out of the paper, put them in an envelope, and send them to the client, or attach them to an email saying, "Congratulations, I saw your son had 4 touchdowns yesterday." Does that have anything to do with building that relationship and that bond?
Yeah, I would think so, as long as it was sincere. You know, you don't want to do those things and have it be perceived as, "Oh, look at this guy, he's just trying to sell me." But if you if you're trying to do that as an opening, then the sincerity is not there. But if you've met with the customer a couple times and you're following, you're generally following, it's all about being genuine. If you're following him and you're generally have those conversations in the past, and you shoot an email saying, "Hey, you know, Joe did a great job," then I think that does go a long way, because it creates that synergy and that personal connection. But you got to be sincere about it.
It appears that a lot of what you've said so far in our conversation is not really product related or physically related, but it's an emotional relationship. And I don't mean relationship, emotionally relating to the client so that they do know that you have their best interests at heart.
Yeah, that's totally, you know, where you want to drive this thing to as part of the hourglass principle is that both sides of that hourglass implicitly trust you, and that your customer thinks that they have your best interest at heart, but at the same time, your company has to have the trust that you have their best interest at heart. And so there's that equilibrium, there's that balance that you have. And I talk about Newton's third law of motion. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So you've got to be able to balance those opposing forces of your corporate requirements and your customer requirements, and so that you can always keep it an even keel. Because once you go out of balance, it's like riding a bicycle or a golf swing or anything else. Once you go out of balance, you have a lot of problems. And that's where I think the hourglass principle really is focused in on, is that it really is creating that implicit trust on both sides of the hourglass. And that's what makes successful trusted advisor salespeople the best that they can be.
Well, you know what, folks, if you've just joined us, my name is John DePietro. This is Authors Alive. Our special guest is Ray Kelly from Dallas, Texas, whose book, The Hourglass Principle, is going to make a lot of people change, or at least examine how they're conducting their sales techniques. Come on.
Tough
all
word.
Those years in radio, I should be able to at least get that right. And we should also tell people that the book is available at Amazon.com. Actually, you can buy it right on the site that you're on right now, where it says buy this book at a discount. I'll tell you, no matter what people pay for that book, they're going to get their money's worth, because I've had an opportunity to go through it with a fine-tooth comb and find that there's more principles that I have questions about. Not questions, because I don't trust them, but I want you to tell our listeners. Ray, there's 8 pillars of managing the middle that you talk about. I know we don't have time for all 8, but tell us a few of them right now, and what are they?
Well, certainly the cornerstone and the first pillar is being trustworthy. And it's basically what we've been talking about for the majority of our time together. And it's being trustworthy in the sense that, you know, the customer knows that you're not going to bend the rules. You're not going to live in that gray area, but yet you don't want to be black and white. You got to be able to take the information that you get from your corporate group and position it in such a way that the customer sees the value in it. But creating that trust, creating that personal connection is really the cornerstone. The other one is directing your moral compass. And your moral compass is basically anything that's influencing your life, either in your business life or your personal life. a lot of what I talk about in the Hourglass flips back and forth between personal development as well as your own self corporate development. So a lot of the time, all work and no play makes Ray a dull boy, and that is a foundation that I've lived on. But at the same time, all play and no work makes Ray a poor boy. So, again, it's that balance of life. You want to become a person that others want to follow. Again, no one likes to be a led. No one likes to be told what to do. But great leaders have two things in common. They have the ability to get there first, ahead of their competition, and they have the ability to create a following.
Make Patton other people want to come.
People
not
want
have
to buy
to
into
to
what's
them.
Going on. Right.
Yep.
And you're not leading anyone.
Want to.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. Treat others how you want to be treated. You know, again, that's a common sense thing, but it's also biblically and scripturally based. You know, treat others as you want to be treated. This is a big one for sales. That's admit your mistakes. As salespeople, and I find it difficult at times to swallow your own sword. You know, you made a mistake. You need to live up to it. You don't blame anybody else.
How about, Ray, if you discover the mistake before the client does of being proactive in calling them, doesn't that solve a lot of problems as opposed to knowing that you made a mistake and then just praying that the customer doesn't find out? Discuss that just for a moment.
Yeah, you know, I kind of even bring it up in my book in that it gets better for you to fall on your own sword than to have someone else stab it on your back. Because what will happen is everybody has competitors. Eventually your competitor will learn through their coach inside the account that you made a mistake or that there was an error that was made. Or
yep.
Someone else who's against your strategy inside that account will find out there was a error that was made, and it'll get blown all out of proportion.
Would you agree that everyone who is productive is going to make a mistake?
No doubt. I mean, we're all human. We're all fallible. So everybody makes a mistake. It's going to happen. It'll happen to the best of us. The best of the best make mistakes. It's what you do with that mistake that helps you with your credibility. Building that trust from pillar number one is if you have the ability to go to a customer and say, look, you know, I noticed that I've overcharged you, or I've noticed that you have 5,000 licenses too many of this product. You know, what do you want to do about it? You know, we were doing an internal audit and found out that we've oversold you. You know, you can either keep it because you're growing so fast, Mr. Customer, and I believe in you, or we can work out some other arrangement. But it's better for you to find that than the customer to find that.
And then if the customer does find it, make sure you respond to them quickly. Is that correct also?
Quickly, absolutely. And you acknowledge that there's a problem. You know, you don't want to get confrontational with your customer, but you acknowledge that there's a problem. And say, let me look into it. I've got your back here. You know, don't get upset. Just take a deep breath and everybody calm down. And let's see what we can do rationally to get this taken care of.
What we can do. You keep using the word we.
We're in this together.
I'm presuming that there's a partnership between you and the client as opposed to I'll fix it because, you know, we instead of me versus you. I've noticed that in your...
Yeah, always run my – I mean, we're in this together. I mean, as a sales leader, you're only as successful as the people that work for you. And as a salesperson, you're only as successful as the customers believe that and can make you. And the customer is not going to continue to trust and build that relationship with you if you can't own up to your mistakes. And I've found in the past that I've been able to take a negative scenario – with a customer and turn it into a positive just by being upfront with them saying, okay, let's figure out a way that we can work through this. And the customer appreciates that sense of loyalty back on that behalf.
How do you deal with what would you say to the sales manager that holds a gun to the heads of his or her people and says, if you don't do this, if you don't do that, then I'm going to, you know, punish you in this way or that way. I mean, how do you deal with the sales management end of it that allows it to be a teamwork environment as opposed to a me versus you environment?
Yeah, that's a different scenario. One, I'd probably give them a copy of my book for starters and have them read that. Reality is you know, you have to, you know, and this is another biblical principle, you know, you have to give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. So if you are being asked to do things and being pushed and pressured, as long as they don't go against your moral judgment and your moral standard, then you have to do what that boss asks you to do. if they're asking you to get on an airplane tomorrow because they need you to, but yet you have a son's football game, there's no moral obligation there. That's a family obligation. So, unfortunately, my opinion would be get on the airplane. So, it's there's a lot of pressure in sales that we're responsible for bringing in the revenue of the company, and that's why typically salespeople get paid the dollars they get paid because we do have to give up some of that family time. But as long as there's no moral objection or moral problem with what the sales manager is asking you to do, I see no problem with them putting on that high pressure tactic to try to get you out there and get you motivated. I've never been fond of scare tactics myself. They don't work well with me. And at that point in time, I'd probably have to sit down with my manager and say, look, we got to come to an agreement that the way that you're trying to motivate me is not how I need to be motivated. And really, it's just being big enough to talk about it. We're all adults, and we need to act like adults and just sit down and explain, look, here's what's going to make me tick. And really, the better sales managers are the ones who can get to that point before the salesperson comes and tells them what it is.
Yep. Well, would you agree with me then that the salesperson that has the guts to talk to the sales manager about methodology of managing is going to be respected as opposed to looked down upon by the sales manager?
You would hope that that's the case. I would say that that's not always going to be the case, but I would think the majority of the time that will be the case, that the respect will be there. And you know what? The big picture is, if the respect's not there, I've said it in my book too, I was looking for a job when I found this one. As much as we think that there's not any jobs out there for good, highly polished salespeople, you can find a job. So I would say that for the salesperson that's having a problem, that they need to go to their manager. And most companies that I've ever seen and I've ever worked for have an open door policy. They can go to their manager and their manager's manager. I talk about managing upward in my book, and you have to be able to work yourself up the ladder to create that self-esteem and self-worth in the company, so that they're trusting you all the way down from the top. It's not just at a peer level or a management level.
So that the people up top know who you are, regardless of how big the company is, many times based upon your performance as well as your ability to relate to different layers of management. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yeah, because you're building value in yourself. Again, on the other side of that hourglass, you're building value up the ladder as you continue. It doesn't mean that you're a troublemaker. It doesn't mean that you're boisterous, but it does mean that you can be outspoken and that you can bring value back to the organization, because this is what your customer is saying. And again, it's not so much what you say, it's how you say it in a lot of cases that gets you the respect that you're looking for within your own organization.
Ray, when this book starts selling, not when it starts selling, but as it sells, I mean, who's the person that you want to, who's your target audience to grab this book? Is it salespeople? Is it sales managers? Is it owners of companies? Who should be picking this book up?
Well, I've struggled with that, because when I originally started with the book, it was clearly geared towards sales. But I've had a lot of people read the book, and a lot of people come to me saying, you know what, this is so much more than sales. This is life application, that you can take the principles that are in here and apply them to just about every area of your life. I use the HOUR acronym, Hone, Objective, Understand, React, in the book. And honing is basically honing any skill, not just your sales skills, but it's your relationship skills. It's your time management skills. It's your family life skills. Creating objectives for you are easy in sales because it's called a quota most of the time. But there's also other objectives. There's spiritual objectives. There's time objectives. There's family objectives. It's understanding where you're at, understanding where you are in the business sale with the relationship to your customer, but also understanding your position within the corporation that you're working for or the company that you're working for, understanding your competition, and then reacting. So you're reacting to the different catalyst changes that happen in your life, whether it's a family crisis or a great victory on a sales win or whatever the case may be, you're always reacting and then starting over. I really think that the book is when it's originally geared towards sales professionals, but it really extends out to be a business life application book.
Great. Ray Kelly, we want to thank you so much for being our guest during this edition of Authors Alive. The book is called The Hourglass Principle. Our guest has been Ray Kelly. The book is available at Amazon, and I think that people who pick this book up are going to gain a great deal from it. We'd like to tell you that this is Authors Alive. My name is John DePietro. Our sponsor has been GreatSellingResults.com. And I thank you so much, and we'll see you again real soon.